Hello and welcome to the latest Bordier broadcast. I'm Mark Sherwood, a director of Bordier UK and a long-standing member of our investment committee. I am here with my colleague and fellow director, another Mark Robinson, who is the Bordier Chief Investment Officer. Mark, we've both been in this industry for a long time, I think over 35 years for both of us, and we've seen a large number of economic cycles and varying markets. Reactions and conditions. But this pandemic really seems to be altering the investment landscape quite markedly, and perhaps more so than in previous crises. Firstly, would you agree with that? And secondly, with the virus still far from being under control, would you care to share some thoughts with us on what has been emerging and how we've reacted?
You're right. We thought we'd seen it all, Mark, particularly after the global financial crisis. But this is an unprecedented period, and so are the steps being taken by central banks and governments, as well as the medical and pharmaceutical professions, to help us get through it. As a reminder, pre-COVID, we were already at a fairly fragile state economically. Although central banks were still in accommodative mood, nursing things along, the trade war between the US and China had been patched up. And some of the more local issues, like the UK's political situation, had been sorted too. So coming into 2020, we were feeling slightly more optimistic about the year ahead. But as we know, or as we know now, the virus has had a major economic impact. And until we have more clarity on how it's transmitted and whether it can be contained, we won't really have too much confidence in forecasts. What we can already see, though, is how some economies are faring relative to others. This is partly down to the timings and extent of the lockdowns in different regions, but also the structure of specific economies. Judging by the latest GDP numbers for the second quarter this year, for example, the less severe economic declines seem to be seen in Asia, while some of the worst have been seen in Europe, including the UK, with the USA somewhere in the middle. So logic might suggest, therefore, that the stronger rebounds are likely to come from those economies that have suffered the most. And there may be some truth in that in the short term. But when we look further out, and assuming this virus has been brought under some sort of control soon, it's becoming increasingly clear that the tectonic plates of global economic activity are shifting in a slightly different direction to the one pre-virus. And that's because the world is adapting fast, and there'll be winners and losers from that adaptation. We're all having to adapt to a new way of living, working, socialising and consuming. Central banks and governments are having to adapt their policies and provide financial assistance, no matter what the long-term consequences. And as a result, financial markets are clearly having to adapt to an extended era of stimulus and ultra-low interest rates.
Thank you, Mark. So where does all this adaptation lead us from an investment standpoint?
Well, what this crisis is already telling us is that this will not be a neat and tidy economic global downturn, followed by an equal and opposite neat and tidy upturn, like you might see in a traditional economic cycle. What I mean by that is that the virus has altered both the geographic and sectoral roadmap midway through the downturn. As we emerge through the other side, the shape of the world economy and what will drive it forward will probably look quite different to what was in place beforehand. There's absolutely no doubt that some businesses will never recover from this crisis. Some will need to shrink significantly before they can even think about rebuilding. But there are also businesses that are coming through this period in reasonable shape and will survive, even if they endure some short-term pain. And then there are those firms that are actually at the very heart of some of the changes we are all having to make or wanting to make to our everyday lives. This crisis has shown that remote working, for example, particularly for the service sector, can work very effectively and efficiently. And so this is likely to have some permanence. Even local GPs and hospital consultants are doing appointments via Zoom, for example, something many thought would be impossible or would take years to happen. And the crisis has clearly also accelerated the use of online services and digitization, whether it be for food deliveries, retail therapy, or sitting room entertainment. A wide range of businesses are seeing a giant leap forward as we adapt to our lives and change our priorities. We're not just talking about technology and associated sectors here. This virus has thrown a whole new assortment of companies into the spotlight, or is requiring others to adapt fast. We seem to have moved on from shortages of toilet rolls and flour to new things. I mean, bikes and bicycles and inflatable kayaks and stand-up paddle boards seem to be selling like hotcakes. And when we see over 60 million people subscribe for the Disney Plus streaming service in under a year, that's telling us priorities are changing. So what's the relevance here? Well, it's that many of these companies at the forefront of change are not found on our shores, but overseas, particularly in America and Asia. The latter region also appealing on a much longer term basis, given the expected growth in domestic demand within Asia. So we've actually made some fairly big changes to our stock market positioning recently. For sterling-based clients, around three quarters of our equity exposure is now outside the UK, having increased both the Asia ex-Japan and US commitments recently, and having reduced the UK. We've not thrown the towel in altogether on the UK market. It's still home to many leading global businesses and many medium and smaller sized niche businesses that serve both a global and domestic audience quite well. But we're more excited about the companies that can be found in other parts of the world and that can adapt to both regional and global trends, whatever they may be. To put this into context, there are about 40,000 companies listed on the world's global stock exchanges, but only around 2,000 or under 5% are actually listed in the UK. So tilting equity exposure more globally and broadening the scope for our underlying active managers to find tomorrow's winners in this change landscape is essentially what this reallocation is all about.
So Mark, allocating more capital internationally, this introduces more currency risk, doesn't it?
Yes, potentially, but strong economies also tend to be associated with stronger currencies in the long run. So we feel this risk is offset somewhat by directing more capital into regions with better long-term potential. It's important to stress here that we are talking about a redistribution of stock market exposure rather than any increase in it. We're still maintaining a neutral stance towards stock markets across all our strategies and have cash on the sidelines if and when we do see a more acceptable entry point. There are still a number of uncertainties related to the virus itself and uncertainty about the scale and shape of the recovery. So some caution is rightly warranted. But leading economic indicators are recovering. And of course, we still have a significant underpin from central banks, anchoring interest rates at historically low levels and allowing capital to flow into risk assets. So there are still attractive real returns to be found in equities, despite current difficulties in forecasting. But active management really is key here to find the best opportunities.
Of course, Mark, share prices and valuations of any business are a reflection of the current and future profitability, which is frequently returned to shareholders by way of a dividend. We've seen a large number of businesses cut or suspend their dividends in recent months, and the recent news of BP, the largest dividend payer in the UK, having halved its dividend, surely is another blow for investors. just how difficult have things become from an income perspective?
Well, it's certainly going to be a leaner year than normal from a pure income perspective. Just focusing on the UK market for a moment, it's historically been one of the more generous dividend-paying regions of the world, paying out a high proportion of profits to shareholders rather than reinvesting them into the business or buying back shares, as other regions of the world have done. The payout ratio in the UK, or the proportion paid out in relation to profits, was one of the highest in the world. But the inverse of that, the dividend cover, was therefore one of the poorest. So whilst the UK market has been a rich source of income for investors, it has also been one of the most vulnerable to the economic shock we're seeing. What the pandemic has exposed, therefore, is those companies that were handing out cash to shareholders well beyond their means. So there's most definitely going to be a need for some resetting of dividend expectations when we come through the other side of this crisis. One other thing to mention, I guess, is the concentration of dividend income in the UK market indices. Around three quarters of UK dividend income, for instance, has historically come from just 20 of the top 100 companies, with two oil companies, Shell and BP, producing a significant proportion of that total. Banks have also effectively been ordered to suspend their dividends by the regulator, so that's a big sector that has further dented the overall payout. So overall, it looks like we'll see a reduction of maybe around 40% in UK market dividends this year compared to last. Of course, this period of reduced dividend also coincides with a period when many investors' own expenditure has fallen, spending less on travel, going out, etc. So to some extent, this reduction can be absorbed. And there's also some hope that as the economy recovers, so businesses will be in a position to resume or raise dividends again. But I think we can expect companies, rather like consumers, to be quite restrained in terms of how and where they spend their cash going forward.
Okay, Mark. So what, if anything, can be done to alleviate some of the current strains on income provision?
Well, the better news is that active management can help to direct capital into less vulnerable sectors. And into companies where there are stronger balance sheets and where dividend cover is better, or where any retention of cash is expected to be quite temporary. So overall, we wouldn't expect to see the same sort of reduction in dividend income from our range of investment funds as we would, say, from markets generally. In the UK, 50 of the top 100 companies have cut or suspended their dividend payments so far this year. But that means that there are another 50 that have not done that. And we shouldn't also forget that there are many companies further down the market cap scale that have strong balance sheets and are in a position to continue or even raise payouts. Again, active managers are in a much stronger position to scour the whole market to identify the better income producing opportunities. It's also worth noting that corporate bond markets still offer an attractive source of income, particularly if one is careful about the quality of the business and balance sheet strength. We've increased, for example, exposure to investment grade corporate debt, where default risks are historically exceptionally low, again via active managers. In this space, they can still find attractive income yields approaching 3%. And opportunities also to make an additional capital return on top. Finally, the moves we have made to increase exposure to areas such as Asia, for example, and certainly for income seekers, has replaced some of the depleted income seen in areas like the UK. Asian, and that includes Japanese businesses, typically hold more cash and less debt on average than Western counterparts, and tend to prioritise strong balance sheets over shareholder rewards. So many are actually in a better position to ride out this pandemic and continue dividend payments. So we can actually find quite attractive and more resilient sources of income in regions like Asia, and it knits in well with our desire to deploy more capital to a region that we feel has better long-term growth prospects.
Mark, that's all been very interesting indeed. Thank you. You've used the words adapt and active a few times, and I guess those words essentially summarise where we are at the moment. This crisis has highlighted the importance of staying active with active underlying managers and being able to adapt quickly, which is what we've been doing. I think you'd also agree with me that this has been one of the busiest periods for necessary investment activity for quite some time. But we've only been able to do this because of our focus on highly liquid investment funds, virtually all of which can be traded on a daily basis. You know, had we strayed into less liquid or esoteric things, then not only may we have run into some trouble from higher volatility and falling values, but we may not have been able to adapt portfolios for the new normal, whatever that means, in the way that we have.
Yes, I agree entirely. There are still several uncertainties ahead, but we do think we have taken the appropriate action and may yet do more to adjust to this new environment, and are additionally comforted in the knowledge that underlying managers are thinking along the same lines as us also.
Thank you, Mark. Well, that's all from this broadcast. Thank you very much for listening. We'll keep you apprised of our ongoing investment thoughts and activities through our regular investment updates and these occasional broadcasts. Even though we're still working remotely, we're still very much available to speak with clients and advisors in more detail as required. Until the next time then, goodbye from us.
Thank you for listening to this Bordier broadcast. Please ensure that you read the accompanying risk warnings shown with this podcast on our website.